Hello and welcome to the Apache Cassandra Corner, a community-driven podcast for all things Apache Cassandra. The Apache Cassandra Corner is sponsored by DataStax. I am your host, Aaron Pletz. Well, hello everyone and welcome back. We're going to do something a little different today. Sarma's been talking to me for a while about doing like kind of a reverse interview thing. So that's what we're going to be doing here today. So welcome, Sarma, and take it away.
I'm very excited to be here, Aaron, and talk to you about all the things you're working on. So how about we start with the conversation, like tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you got introduced to computers.
Oh, okay. So my name's Aaron Pletz. Kind of like Sarma said, I'm a developer advocate with DataStax. Been active in the Cassandra community for a really long time. I think it's coming up on 12 years, actually.
Oh, wow.
So
you started an early version, like 0.8.
Wow. When I was at Granger, we were running 0.8 in production. Yeah. Wow. And then shortly after I got on the team, I didn't know too much about Cassandra at the time, but yeah, we, as a team, we upgraded to 1.1, I think. So that was about the time that we went like from, you know, a 0.0 version to a 1.0 version. So that was pretty significant. Yeah. Yeah. As far as how I got started, you know, I really have my my mother to thank for that. When I was like 10 or 11, something like that, she got a she bought a Tandy 1000 EX computer, and that was what I. Oh, you know what? I might have the book.
Wow.
Yeah, look at that. Learning Ooh. To Program Basic for the Tandy 1000 by David Lean.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. I think this is 1985, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, that's the book I learned to program from. Yeah.
So what kind of language was this Tandy? Like, was it similar to Basic or?
Yeah, it's similar to Basic. And I mean, you know, Sarma, that in that age in the 80s, every line of computers had their own dialect of Basic, you know. Mm-hmm. You'd go to an Apple II, it'd be a little different. You'd go to a C64, it'd be a little different. I mean, even there were slight differences between like, you know, Tandy Basic and straight up IBM PC Basic. I mean, it was, there were little differences here and there. So I did a little bit on all of those, actually.
So was this Tandy computer like a Christmas gift?
No, it was just something my mom wanted to get. You know, she was an accountant, you know, so she had, you know, a reason to have a computer at home. And I just thought that was really, really cool. So I wanted to get into that.
So that brings us to, let's talk about Java, because I see a big Java board in the background there, Java and AI.
So that's right.
About 28 years ago, we were introduced to a new language, Java. We used to use C, C++ at that time.
Yep.
My early experience with this language is I'm not a programmer, but when I saw pointers, I was lost. I said, I'm not going to learn this programming. I gave up on C, never learned C++, and then Java came around. And the first thing I noticed about 28 years ago, they said, hey, you know what? No more pointers. You don't have to do the memory management on your own. And I said, maybe I'll get into it. And I've been in parallel working with Java a little bit. But what I want to know is how your journey has been since the beginning of Java to now, 28 years later. And what excited you to start with the technology at that time, whenever you started?
Yeah, yeah. So so my journey with Java began in when I was in university. I went to the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. So it's like an extension of the main one in Madison, but they had a really great computing program. In fact, the degree program is called Management Computer Systems because, you know, in the 90s, having like a MIS type of degree was all the rave at the time. It's like computer science degrees are today. That's what businesses want. Well, businesses wanted management information system degrees. So that was my major, was Management Computer Systems. And similar to what you mentioned, C++ was like the main language that they use to teach everything. And you're right, pointers are they're difficult. It's a little difficult for some people to wrap their heads around that. I think it was my last semester, senior year, I had a class called Client Server Internet. And typically in the client server, internet class, you know, they take you through like building web pages, just doing straight up HTML, a very little bit of like, you know, early vanilla Netscape JavaScript, you know, but our teacher said, hey, we're going to do something a little bit different this semester. There's this new language called Java from Sun Microsystems, and we're going to spend 2 weeks on it.
Wow.
that was it. I had 2 weeks of, oh, you know what? I still have that book too.
Actually. Oh my God.
That's what I do. I collect old books. This is Java 1.1. This is the book that I had for that class. Yeah.
I think you have a treasure on that side of the wall, you know?
I do have a lot of old books over there. That is for sure. Yeah. But anyway, so we did it for 2 weeks, and really the thing that excited me the most about Java was the fact that it was designed to run anywhere. You know, it was that, hey, you can write your code and you can take that code and you can run it on a Unix machine. You can run it on a PC. I mean, on a Mac, anywhere. And I always loved that design principle of portability around Java. And that's really what got me excited about it. Just to continue on that, it reminds me of something that my professor did say that during that semester, that, you know, this is going to be like a language for the web. And the example he used, I'm not kidding, was you wouldn't write a database in Java.
Oh, come on.
So, and here we are, you know.
Here we are. I'm sure there are more than a handful of databases written in Java. I'm sure there are like more than 20 today. Yeah. So we know that Java started slow, but now it caught up so much. And we all know that Cassandra is developed in Java.
Right.
How did you get introduced to Cassandra? And we want to know, like, you know, what excited you in the early stages of when you worked with Cassandra? We know you started even before 1.0. So we'll talk about a little bit of thrift.
So what happened was, like I said, I was working at Grainger. I actually worked for one of the Grainger, they called them specialty brands. So the brand I worked for was called Lab Safety Supply. And they had an office in Janesville in Wisconsin. And that's where, you know, my family and I lived at the time. So I had a nice like 8-minute drive to work every day. It was really great. But what happened was, is I was on the web team for Lab Safety Supply. And I really wasn't a web developer by trade, you know. So I kind of gravitated more toward like a lot of the back end things on our team. And we didn't have a DBA for our SQL Server database. So I kind of, you know, started doing a lot of that work. And we had a little bit of a reorg at that time. And I got, you know, our director moved me from the specialty brand web team, me and my coworker, Paul, actually, up to like this, they called it the mid-tier team on Grainger proper. You know, so we were building out like kind of like the middle service layer for Grainger.com, and the backend data store of that was a 5-node Cassandra cluster.
Wow.
So that was how I got started there. And you know, it was right away as you know, kind of writing Java to support and extend our service layer. But you know, as our Cassandra guys started to move on, I kind of fell into the Cassandra DBA role there. And that was really how I got into it. I actually did Grainger's first DataStax Enterprise upgrade. And that was to go straight from 1.1 up to I think it was DSE 3.2, if I remember right there. So yeah, that was a little bit ago.
So which year we're talking about approximately?
This would be DSE. 2012.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I did the upgrade in 13.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And actually, you know, Sarma, a little funny story around that time. I forget exactly which one of those years it was, but you know, we had a problem where we had cluster would slow down and things were, you know, performance was starting to get bad and we had no idea what was going on. We troubleshot a lot of things. And we were finally getting to be DataStax customers. So, you know, my my manager came up to us and he's like, hey, we got a call with someone from DataStax. So, all right, everybody come in, everybody come in. So we're all in this conference room. The phone comes on and he's like, hi, this is Patrick McFadden from DataStax.
I was expecting that. Oh my God.
And you know, at that time, Patrick was really doing a lot of DevRel at DataStax. So anytime there was a webinar going on, Patrick was the one running it. So, you know, we're all kind of sitting there and Patrick comes on and I'm like nudging my cork going, that's Patrick McFadden. Holy crap.
Yeah.
So that was the first time that I'd met Patrick. So that was on a support call. Right. And now I work for him.
Yeah. Patrick is just amazing. You know, when I started Cassandra somewhere in 2014, end of 2014, I mean, I knew about NoSQL, but I never seriously got into it. And then the first few months when I was, you know, searching online, YouTube, Patrick shows up everywhere.
He does.
And then
yes.
that's how I fell in love with it. The first thing is about the people who is talking about it is Patrick, John Haddad,
there are
a couple of other people, but what Patrick leaves behind is a legacy, right? He basically inspires me, at least, like, you know, a lot of others. So great.
No, for sure.
Great start, right?
Yep.
So just because we just covered the Java with Cassandra, tell us about vector search.
Oh, so yeah. So vector search, you know, to be honest, I was a little skeptical about it when I first heard we were pulling that in, but now that I've done quite a bit with it, I have to say it's pretty cool. So the idea there is that, you know, you're creating a vector embedding, which is essentially like an array of, you know, like floats, essentially, that's it's a numerical representation of like text or like an image. And the cool thing about that is, you know, Cassandra now with 5.0, you know, allows you to do an ANN or an approximate nearest neighbor, you know, and I think it's a great way to do things like product recommendations. I mean, it really does open up a lot of opportunity to do some really cool things in, you know, in simple Java applications, things that in the past have taken a lot of computing power to do. Just, you know, now we can use vector search and yeah, it's not a big deal. You know, like there's a legacy recommendation app out there that I've worked on at one of my prior companies where there's a job that runs, right, that aggregates all this data around like clicks and cart ads and activity and things like that, like on a per user kind of basis, you know, for things off the website, so that when you add something, you know, to your cart, it says, hey, other people have also who added this product have also added this, you know. And you know, the example I like to use a lot is, hey, you added, you know, a Star Wars action figure to your cart. Well, here are some Star Wars Legos, here are Star Wars movies, Star Wars video games, you know, things like that. Vector search allows you to do that very easily and very quickly. But it's like, I know a lot of those legacy jobs, like the one I'm talking about, it's like this huge Hadoop MapReduce thing that takes like 2 or 3 days to run. And it's just not, that's just not, you know, feasible going forward, A. And then B, vector search is a much better way to do that. You know, so you can take like a product, you know, and like vectorize the, like maybe just even the name of the product and create an embedding off of that. You know, and then when you add a certain product, it can do an ANN of that product name and say, hey, have you tried this product? You know, it just makes a very quick and simple way to do things that, I mean, really just like 3 or 4 years ago were, I mean, it would take days of processing to kind of build up, you know, and then, you know, it's like, even when you're using a recommendation system like that, I mean, they don't need to be like totally up to date, but you're using data that's 3 or 4 days old already just when you start. So, you know,
that's amazing.
Right. So vector search allows you to, yeah, like I said, a quick and easy way to get around a lot of that.
So you just mentioned one thing I want to get clarity on. You said something called ANN.
Oh, yes. It's an approximate nearest neighbor. So it's an algorithm for vector search. Yes.
So If I put it in a different way, you're basically looking for the similar products which you can then recommend to the people. Let's say your example earlier, you're buying something Star Wars. There are a lot of these similar products which are Star Wars.
Right.
And then you can now recommend them, say, hey, here is the Star Wars Lego. Okay, got it.
That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And just to mention, the vector search is totally built on storage attached indexes, SAI.
That's right. That's right.
And they're right now already available on AstroDB.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan is to put it in Cassandra 5.0 when it comes
yep,
out.
That's right. That's right. The next alpha release of Cassandra 5.0 should have that. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm running alpha 1 right now. So I'm waiting for alpha 2.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Same here.
Perfect.
Same here. Yep. Messing around with alpha 1. That's right.
Perfect. Perfect. So the vector search is very important for the machine learning and AI. I just want to reiterate that, because it's, you know, when we are moving from the legacy way of doing stuff, like as you mentioned, a Hadoop job running for 3
right.
days,
right,
and then the recommendation may be already outdated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now basically the vector search along with storage attached indexes will allow us to get a near real time you know, low latency search,
right, right,
or recommendation basically. So, you know, there are a lot of young people or a lot of experienced DBAs from different database background. They use Oracle or Postgres, MySQL. All three products I mentioned are RDBMS.
Yep.
Or the young people who are coming out of college have no experience but want to get into Cassandra world. Let us know, what is your advice for them? Like, what should they do or not do?
Mm-hmm. And how to pick that up, get started learning, do you think? Yeah. You know, a lot of, I'd say probably a really good way to get started is to look around on YouTube. You know, there are a lot of good videos out there on just how to do some very basic things. Sarma, actually, you've created quite a bit of good content out there too for getting started. And I mean, and a lot of your courses on Udemy are free as well. You know, so you really can't go wrong with that. You know, and just to go to another shameless plug, you know, our YouTube channel, DataStax Developers, I think has a lot of great content. You know, we usually have things out there from like the, you know, the perspective of a developer, but, you know, if there are videos out there on like intro to Cassandra, you know, to understand a little bit about, you know, like the computer science that goes into it and how to work with it. You know, there's a little bit out there too, as far as videos go on how to do like admin work in Cassandra. So yeah, that, and there's a lot of great books out there too.
Going back to Java. So we have been still using, a lot of us are still using Java 8.
Yeah.
And recently there is a long-term support version of Java 21 released.
That's right.
Just last month. So what would you consider the top three features of Java 21? And so let's start.
It's funny you ask that, Sarma. I haven't talked about this a lot yet, but I have a new book coming out that's in the end of editing, and it should be coming out, I hope, by the end of the month. But it's called Code with Java 21.
Wow.
And I've worked with BPB Publishing on this one. I have a lot of Java 21 features that I really do like. First and foremost, virtual threads is a game changer. You know, before that, you kind of had to do a little bit of like managing the thread pool yourself. I mean, because really, you know, prior to 21, threads in Java are like operating system level threads and processes. But with virtual threads, you're kind of letting the JVM kind of take a little more control of that. And the JVM can say, well, maybe this doesn't need to be its own thread, and maybe it just needs these resources. And it's really, you know, it's really a more developer friendly way of managing, you know, concurrency and, you know, some of the challenges that come along with that. So I think that one's huge. You know, the other one that's really big too is Java records. You know, so that way you don't have to go and create like entity classes with getters and setters for everything. There's a lot of boilerplate code you know, that goes into building like data intensive Java applications. Mm-hmm. And if you just have, you know, if you need a plain old Java object, a POJO, you know, that just has a few properties, a record is the way to go. And you can define it in line and you have it. And yeah, it's really super useful. You know, and then the other feature that I really liked is, you know, a lot of the expansion and additions that have gone into Java collections. So now there are delivered features like get first, get last. And it really helps with a lot of the enumeration and working with, you know, data in Java that comes back in like a list or a set or a hash map. So yeah, a lot of that, those three changes, I think for developers are kind of the biggest ones. You know, a lot of people like to talk about unnamed classes and how it makes it easier for new folks. And, you know, they're not wrong, but in the grand scheme of things, I think those three are the big three.
Wow. So two out of three you mentioned are actually for the database. So I'm sure we'll have a lot of implementation for Cassandra on 21 when we get there.
When we get there. Yeah.
When we get there. Yeah. I mean, Cassandra is a very stable product. So it takes a lot of time to test everything properly and change any of these versions. So we're almost at the end of the year. We are expecting a very big product launch, Cassandra 5.
Right.
And we have a Cassandra Summit coming up. So I'm sure you're preparing something like, you know, a very good talk or multiple talks. Tell us more about the Cassandra Summit.
Yeah. So yeah, the Cassandra Summit, I believe, is December 12th and 13th at the San Jose McHenry Convention Center. And the talk that I'm giving is called, it's one I've given a few times before. It's called Guerrilla Tactics for Building Scalable E-commerce Systems on Cassandra. And, you know, the idea is that, you have a lot of core subsystems that go into building like a large scale e-commerce website. So I have tips and tactics in there on like, you know, how to model things out for like a product hierarchy, you know, like a shopping cart, you know, user profile login, how to process orders. But kind of the big addition that I've made to that is product recommendations using vector search. So I think that's going to be pretty cool too.
Nice. Yeah, so yeah, definitely we'll meet at the summit, and you know, whoever wants to go, don't miss the summit, because I went in 2016 and it was a blast.
So oh, yeah. Yep.
So we would like to meet all of the community members and, you know, spend a lot of technical time talking about these new features.
Yep. It is going to be pretty cool. Yep. For sure.
So Aaron, we spent talking about so many different things. So do you have any closing remarks? And I definitely think this was just an excellent discussion. We learned a lot from your experience. We discussed a couple of product related stuff. We should definitely have more conversations like this.
Yeah, thanks, Arma. This was actually quite a bit of fun, I think. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I guess if I could close with anything, it's just that, you know, one thing that I still hear a little bit is that, you know, people will ask, well, if I don't have a lot of data, am I really using Cassandra the way it's supposed to be used? And, you know, I would say that, that you know, no, Cassandra shouldn't be the database of last resort. And that's really what a lot of the work at DataStax over the past couple of years has been about, is making that be the database that's the first choice, you know, because, yeah, we want to build a full-featured database to help developers concentrate on, you know, the business side of things, what they want to be concentrating on. They don't want to have to worry about the database. And that's where we're trying to go. So yeah, if you have a project, even though it's small, you know, we want you to look at Cassandra as a viable option, go, oh, you know, hey, that might be all right.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, with all the discussion we did, because we are focusing so much on the AI machine learning, we did not talk about the ACID transactions coming into Cassandra 5.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
That's a big deal, because I have gone to attended several meetings where people come in and they immediately think Cassandra does not support consistency.
That's right.
And then, you know, we try spending time to explain how consistency works. But there are some people from the old generation, they don't want to see anything if there is no asset.
Right.
So asset is coming into Cassandra 5.
Yep.
Doesn't mean Cassandra is going to take over everything else, but definitely Cassandra is something we should definitely keep in our architecture layout because
sure.
it can scale well. It supports a huge amount of transactions coming in, which is suitable for today's what we are doing with a lot of data collection and processing. And what I like about it is so flexible that it works well with all the streaming technologies, machine learning related use cases. By the way, storage attached indexes work very well with the geographical information system, GIS kind of workloads. So,
oh, nice.
Good. It opens up a lot of new workloads or the use cases. So I definitely suggest trying out Cassandra for sure.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. That's the only thing, other thing I was going to say, and well, you said it on the end, is it does open up Cassandra for a lot of new good use cases that it probably wasn't a good fit for before, but hey, it can handle it now.
Yep. Okay, cool. Thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us, and you have a wonderful day.
Hey, you're welcome, Sarma. You too. I'll talk to you later. And that's all for today. Thank you for listening to the Apache Cassandra Corner. Apache Cassandra is a registered trademark of the Apache Software Foundation. Thank you, and have a great day.